cheeky little place called Funny Town.
Those in the know that since November, a town full of bright, colorful, silly, one-tooth bunnies are appointment viewing for preschoolers and their parents. And I'm guessing a college kid or two, if you know what I mean. Bunnytown airs on Kids Cable Channel Playhouse Disney, and it's the brainchild of David Rudman. He's been making puppets since he was a kid, but got his big break from a big name in puppeteering, Jim Henson.
I was ready to quit school, you know. This is what I wanted to do ever since I was 8 years old. And I was 18 years old, and I was sitting in Jim Henson's office, and he, you know, said that we really want you to work for the company. And I said, all right, I'll quit college and come work for you right now. And he said, no, you should really stay in college, finish school, and you can work for us during your vacations. So that was a nice way to go to college, having a summer, having, you know, working for the Muppets during my break. So I did Muppets Take Manhattan when I was 19.
Wow.
And I did Labyrinth when I was 21 or something like that. And then I just would go back and forth between Connecticut and New York and work for them. So
you had two really great experiences, it seems to me, working with Henson and the Muppets. Is one, you got to assume the role of one of the great characters of all times, and you got to create a new character.
Right.
So let's talk about the new character. Who did you create?
Baby Bear was my first main character on the show. He was a one-time character. So originally he was just in one script that one of the writers, Lou Berger, he wrote this one show where we did a Three Bears thing where Baby Bear came to the Fix-It Shop to get his chair fixed. And it was really fun. It was written really funny. And he was kind of this kind of ornery little guy, and he came there with Goldilocks, and he was complaining, and he was kind of aggravated that she kept breaking his chair. I was thinking it'd be funny to give him like a little speech impediment just to kind of maybe soften his anger a little bit and make him cuter. And there was a lot of R words written in the script. It was like break my chair and porridge and you drive me crazy. And I thought it'd be funny to, you know, if he has trouble with his R's, it could be really funny. So he wound up, you know, sounding like, you know, you drive me crazy, lady. You're always breaking my wee little chair and, you know, I'm trying to eat my porridge and... You know, so
I like that he's kind of like from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Sort of from the Bronx a little bit, an attitude and accent.
And what happened was I went in and did the voice and did the character, and it went really well, and the writers liked it. And the next season, a couple of the writers picked up on it, and he had a couple more shows. And over time, he just became one of the main characters.
The other character was so well established. Cookie Monster is so well established. Yeah. To step into being the voice and the person and the spirit behind Cookie Monster about 10 years ago, were you nervous about that at all?
Yeah. I was. I grew up watching Sesame Street, and Frank Oz created the character, and, you know, he's brilliant. And I just, you know, it was terrifying, actually, to kind of step in and try to, you know, do this character and not have anybody know that it's different. Frank still does a character every once in a while, and he just was getting very busy, so they said we need to have some other people come in and do the character. And so we all the puppeteers on the show auditioned for the characters, and so I wound up getting Cookie.
Is that one of those you're like, yes, got Cookie?
It was. The first thing I was like, oh my God, Cookie? How am I going to pull this off? So, no, I just studied what Frank did, and I tried to just, you know, do what he did and really try to get into the character. And so, and it seems like it's working all right. No one seems to really notice much of a difference.
At some point, like most creative people, when you're working in a great shop, you do have dreams of doing your own thing. So you went off and you started your own company.
Right.
Spiffy?
Spiffy Pictures, yeah, with my brother Adam and my friend Todd Hannert.
Spiffy Pictures has created Bunnytown. Yeah. What happens in Bunnytown?
It's like a variety show. That's sort of what we wanted to do with Bunnytown was create a variety show for preschoolers that's set in Bunnytown. So we have still lots of great music. We have running gags that run throughout the show. We have funny segments with different characters, and but it's segmented, so you know we can sort of move around and see what's going on all over Bunnytown in one episode. You know, we have pirate bunnies doing a song, and then we go and we have a super bunny scene. And then every once in a while, actually twice in every episode, a bunny runs out of Bunny Town and he runs through these tunnels and heads over to People Town.
Ah.
And he pops out in People Town and he sees what the characters in People Town are doing.
Yeah. Who's smarter, the bunnies or the peoples in your show?
I think bunnies.
The bunnies
actually,
are a little smart, aren't they?
So, yeah.
I thought so. I didn't want to say so, but I thought the bunnies were definitely superior.
I think so. No offense.
The characters from Bunny Town that you have brought here today, they're small.
Yeah.
The puppets that you've created for this series, I don't know, just because I thought it's on TV, I guess I thought it would be bigger than life, but they're only, what, about 8 inches tall?
Yeah. They're tiny, and they're little rod puppets. And I think when we do this on a bunch of our shows, we make the characters really small, and it just gives it a whole new look, you know. And most of puppets on TV look like Muppets or are shot like Muppets. So what we do is what we do on all these shows, we bring the scale down, and we treat it more like an animation, like an animated movie. And we shoot it one camera, we storyboard everything, and we art direct pretty much every shot. And because the characters are so small, we can do a lot more with the set and with the props, and we can have them driving around in cars, and we can have this big town set and a big lake, you know, a character fishing on a big lake, and that stuff that you can't really do with, you know, regular sized puppet characters because it just would be too huge of a set.
Well, one thing I think is interesting about the puppets, are they puppets, right?
Yeah,
that's the right language?
Puppets, yeah.
Small, primary colors, one tooth.
Right, blue noses.
And blue noses. I'm guessing that's not the original look of these puppets, that they've evolved over time.
They've evolved a little bit. They've always had the overbite and the one tooth that was sort of always there, and the long ears. The noses have changed colors over time. I don't know what they were originally, but...
I did notice, and this is completely a compliment, that the puppets are a little bit lo-fi. They're very simple. Super bunny has got a carrot on his chest.
Right.
And he's just got a little red tiny cape.
Yeah. And
it's great.
Well, yeah, I mean, the costumes are great on all these guys. And I think that's what... They're basically the same, you know, shape and you know, style, and it just the costumes sort of make them their own characters, you know, just by giving little Bad Bunny this evil eyebrow and two yellow teeth, you know, he looks evil.
He looks like trouble.
And I think, you know, again, a lot of it is I'm never a fan of, like, really elaborate puppets. I don't, you know, a lot of puppet characters have, like, moving eyes and moving eyebrows and, you know, their faces move and, you know, and I pretty much like, you know, simplicity with the characters and let the characters come from the performers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And because I think, you know, it really comes down to whether the character's appealing or not. And you could, you know, you can spend $1 million on making this animatronic, you know, character, and then you can, you know, get a pen and draw a little thing on your finger, you know,
right.
and make him, you know, this character, you know, and whoever is more appealing, you know, it just comes from the character.
That was my conversation with David Rudman, co-creator of Bunny Town, which airs on Playhouse Disney. But wait, we aren't finished blowing the lid off of Bunny Town. While the felt feel-good bunnies, well, they're the stars of the show, there are humans featured too. One of the residents of People Town is a sports commentator named Pinky Pinkerton, and she's played by actress Polly Frame. Yeah, that's the same Polly Frame who's appearing in a production of Macbeth in Brooklyn that's about to move to Broadway. From Shakespearean tragedy to children's TV, Polly Frame is all charm and Scottish brogue. She told me all about Pinky Pinkerton.
Well, she's a very glamorous sports announcer. In People Town, there's the wacky world of super silly sports, which Pinky Pinkerton is at every day announcing whatever sports are on. And she basically compares whatever contest is happening and takes the audience through it, takes them right up to the finishing line and whoever wins. And she normally involves her getting some sort of pie in the face or chucked in a puddle. Or
Well, if you have to describe the super silly sports, what kind of stupid people tricks are we talking about?
Anything you could possibly imagine. We've had giant mice chased, being chased by giant cats, being chased by giant dogs.
I enjoyed the staring contest between the kid and the potato.
The match begins. Ladies and gentlemen, Magoo versus Potato. Surely this will be one for the ages, and we bring it to you live today here on Super Silly Sports.
When you first read these scripts, What did you think about this project where you have to navigate games where people stare at potatoes and giant mice, cats chase mice and giant dogs chase them? And
well, I had no idea. My agent said, he had the script, emailed me the script, said, have a little look. And I remember thinking, this is like half Monty Python, half for kids. It was the surrealist thing I'd ever read. And I thought it was fantastic right from the start. But also, it was so full of tongue twisters as well. I mean, it's actually the best exercise I've ever done, a warm-up, in terms of what I'm doing in Shakespeare at the moment as well, because you're so verbally warmed up because they are impossible to say.
So your training as an actress really has come in handy, not just that you're good at physical comedy or have a sense of humor, but some of your training really goes into your character, Pinky Pinkerton.
It does, yeah. I mean, in the sense, actually, I mean, it's equally complicated and definitely demanding doing something like Pinky Pinkerton as it is to doing a Shakespeare or something more serious, because it demands the same amount of energy, same amount of focus, same amount of dedication to what you're doing and what you're delivering. And in fact, children are probably a much harder audience than the audiences we're having in New York at the moment, because you know, if you slip up, they'll know it.
We're speaking with Polly Frame. She's one of the stars of Bunnytown, playing Pinky Pinkerton. But you've also been performing in Macbeth for a good part of a year now, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Were you ever working on Bunnytown and Macbeth at the same time?
Oh, pretty much all the time, actually.
No, yeah, really?
Right from the start. I think I did the first, shot the first pilot for Bunnytown when we were in rehearsal for Macbeth. So I was reading all these wonderful Bunnytown scripts in the day, and then in the evening, doing well in terms of research for Macbeth, watching lots of kind of horror films and things like that. So it was the complete opposite. And throughout the summer, when I was actually performing Macbeth in Chichester, I was coming back to London to shoot Bunnytown in the daytime, and there were times where I thought, now, what happens if I go on stage and I get an oh me or an oh my, and instead of an oh hail Macbeth, how will that work?
When you were first starting out in theatre, did you think, I want to be a dramatic actress or I want to be a comedic actress? Do you have a preference?
I didn't actually make a conscious choice. I'm lucky. I enjoy both actually very much. I think it's a very nice balance to be able to do the two. And in fact, I think sometimes some of the best serious actors are the ones that can do comedy. She says blowing her own trumpet.
Blowing her own trumpet is Polly Frame. Polly, thanks for coming by the studios.
Great. Thank you very much.
And if you have a continued interest in all things Bunnytown, you got to check out the video on our website, npr.org/Bryant Park. Okay, that's it, bunnies and people from Peopletown. No more Bryant Park today. We were so glad you were with us. We are always online at npr.org. This is the Bryant Park Project. It's directed by Jacob Gans. Our staff includes Dan Pashman, Ian Chillog, Wynn Rosenfeld, Angela Ellis, Caitlin Kenny, and Nathan Duell. Elsa Butler, Laura Silver, and William Hoffman light up our lives as interns. Manoli Weatherall and Josh Rogerson are our technical directors. Trisha McKinney is our editor. Laura Conaway edits our website and our blog. Our senior producer is Matt Martinez. On vacation. Come back soon, Matt. Sharon Hoffman is our executive producer. Rachel Martin, our newscaster. Come back soon, Rachel. We do miss you. Cassie McKinney is our sports analyst. Cassie, again, who are you picking for March Madness?
Butler. Butler.
Got it. I'm Allison Stewart, and this is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.